Hi, welcome to Funded. I'm Caitlin Finney, and this is a Clearinghouse CDFI'd podcast, here to give you a glimpse into the community development work Clearinghouse CDFI is doing around the country. Listeners can expect to tune into conversations discussing what a CDFI is, how getting funded by a CDFI works, community impact stories, and how we are all working towards building better communities together. Hello, and welcome back to Funded by Clearinghouse CDFI. I'm your host, Caitlin Finney. You're joining us on episode 7 of Funded. Today, we're kind of going back to the basics. We reviewed a little bit on episode 1, all about CDFIs, and kind of gave a baseline knowledge about what CDFIs are all about. But today, we have Keone Gray. He's going to walk us through CDFI 101. We're going to kind of revisit some of the basic vocabulary, some of the funding process so that you can get a better understanding of what the whole entire process start to finish looks like. And Keone's going to answer some of our questions and walk us through those details. Keone, welcome to Funded. How are you?
I'm doing well, Caitlin. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Good. Can you give our audience a personal or professional background and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So again, my name is Keone Gray. The name Keone comes from Hawaii. I was born in Hawaii, military brat. I have over 16 years of banking experience in financial services, as well as about 5 years in helping small businesses, as well as commercial lending. And I'm very passionate about what I do. And I love to help business owners reach their goals and dreams.
That's awesome. Well, you're at the right spot then with Clearinghouse.
Yes, ma'am.
Today, we're going to talk about the differences between CDFIs and traditional banks a little bit more in depth. And with your experience, you'll be able to shed some light on some questions that we have for you. So are you ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it then. We started season 1 by getting a baseline knowledge about what CDFIs are all about. But Keone, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the differences between CDFIs and traditional banks. So can you start with maybe the purpose? I know CDFIs are mission-driven and banks are a little bit more profit-driven. Can you speak to that difference there?
Yeah, so with the CDFIs, and for those that don't know, that stands for Community Development Financial Institution. We primarily focus on economic development, financial inclusion in underserved and economically distressed areas. So we kind of have a educational approach, as I would like to call it, where we provide not only funding dollars to businesses, but also technical assistance to business owners, where we may assist them with marketing plans, social media strategies, things of that nature. Your traditional banks, as you stated, are commonly profit-driven, so they have more stringent requirements as opposed to your CDFIs, which we are a little more lenient and can take on more risk when it comes to lending to borrowers. With your traditional financial institutions, like I say, just harping on the profit, they have shareholders, right? And shareholders have expectations and they expect a return on their investment. So they're not approaching clients from the perspective of these are the steps that you need to take to be in position to become lendable. They're usually working with existing clients, well-established clients who have 2 or more years of verifiable revenue, whereas with the CDFIs, we can take a chance on startups and businesses that may not have as much experience or may not be established as they want to be.
Interesting. Okay. I knew about some of the flexibility, but I didn't take into account that some of the traditional banks will want to lend to people that are already established in their...
Correct. They want to have solid proof that they can make their money back. And usually your track record as a business, your tax returns, your financials will show them what they're looking for. Most people or most lending institutions will not lend based on projections, what you expect your company to make. They want to know, bottom line, how can we get paid after you lending you this money?
One of the other things that you mentioned was that the traditional institutions will have stricter requirements. Can you speak about maybe why that is? Why can CDFIs be a little bit more flexible?
CDFIs can take on more risk because we have several funding sources, whereas most banks, they don't receive a tons of funding sources. It's basically on what they can conjure up, what they can muster up as far as building revenue. So they're a little more risk averse when taking on new clients. So with us being a little more lenient in that area, we can be flexible in our policies, where as traditional banks are just straightforward, black and white. This needs to be your credit score. You should have this many trade lines. You can't have any late payments, charge-offs, things of that nature. Whereas I like to say, from a CDFI standpoint, we kind of understand that life happens, especially in those demographics that we target. So based on the clients, we'd like to take a holistic approach to a client's credit profile. Maybe they've had some trouble in the past, but what have they done since then to try to correct it? So it not only shows us that the client is persistent in their efforts, but they're also resilient. They may have faced some hardships in the past, but they've overcome that.
Yeah. The CDFI approach takes the whole person into account.
Correct.
Which brings me to my next point, is that CDFIs often provide a tailored loan or a unique approach per person. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, no. I was just going to harp on, that's why I love Clearinghouse, because we don't have any standard product. The way we approach our clients, we take each client on a per basis, and everyone has a unique situation. No one comes in with the exact same situation or the exact same property type that they're trying to secure, or whatever the case may be. So I love the fact that we're able to tailor a product to a client's specific needs. Most of your traditional banks, they have straightforward products. You have a commercial mortgage where they have their terms set, they have their amortization set. And based on those requirements, some business owners may not be able to meet the financial requirements to service that debt. And that's only based on how that loan is structured. So with a CDFI, with us having more flexibility in that area, let's say if we have a client that we can prove they're able to service the debt for a certain amount of time, but what if we want to, in addition to have them make their payment, put more money in their pocket? So we may have them on a 2-year term, but we can stretch that term out over 30-year amortization. So even though the term is for 10 years, and at the end of that term, they have a balloon payment, or they can refinance, because it's spread out over 30 years, it's just like they have that term for 30 years. So the payments are smaller, which can work with us, a business owner budget, and keep more money in their pocket at the same time.
And that kind of expertise right there is why we can offer some of the educational components, and we can set up the borrowers for success long term, not just enough to get them through their loan process. So
absolutely. So I like to say, if you meet with a client today and they're not in a position to be lendable, I always say that a delay is not a denial. We can't do it today, but you can do X, Y, and Z to put you in a position so we can do it in the future.
Okay, Keone, thank you for walking us through a little bit more on the differences between CDFIs and traditional banks.
Absolutely.
I know that some BDOs often get questions about some of the terminology that is brought up during the loan application process and funding. So I wanted to rattle a few off for you and get some definitions so that we can understand a little bit better what we're talking about.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, first one. What are loan guarantees? I know that word is thrown around quite often, but I've never really pinned down the definition. Can you define it for us?
Yeah, so loan guarantees, and most people are probably familiar with saying like guarantor or some terminology of that nature on the loan. And it's basically providing an alternate source of repayment for a borrower's loan obligations. It ensures that whether the borrower or a creditworthy third party with expertise has the financial incentive and ability to basically pay for the loan in the event that the borrower defaults or runs into trouble with paying back the note. So the guarantee just ensures that there's someone else that can get us our money should the borrower have issues making payments.
Okay, so it's like a backup plan for the borrower.
Exactly, yes.
That's always good. Plan B is always good to have.
Yes.
Okay. Another term that I see thrown out and that we've used on the podcast before but have never defined are equity investments. How does that factor into the loan process?
Yeah. So equity investments, as I would explain it from a borrower's perspective, is basically how much skin does a borrower have in the game. It's rare that financial institutions will lend 100% of a requested loan amount. So the loan to value, most companies will do anywhere between 70 to 80% loan to value. So can a borrower make up that remaining 20 to 30%? And that's basically, what have they invested in the deal? Have they already purchased materials? Have they already paid for analysis from professionals to be done if it's a construction deal? Do they have liquid cash that they can invest in the deal? So basically, how much skin do they have in the game to contribute to getting this loan secured?
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up. What about, this one might be a little bit harder to wrap my head around. What are venture capital funds?
Venture capital funds. That's a great question. I guess the easiest way to look at it is a pool of investments that may come from various sources. So you may have a pool of investment funds coming from Jack, Jill, and John. They put their money together and they may seek out private equity stakes in startups or small to medium-sized businesses. So usually when you have a small business or a small enterprise, they don't have all of the funding that's required to get off the ground. So they seek additional investors. And sometimes in return for their investment, those investors will have a percentage of ownership in that business. So they'll rake in that percentage in profits and also lose that percentage in losses should the business take any loss.
Do you get capital from the venture fund?
Yes, you do receive capital from the venture fund. And that's basically all of the pool resources from those investors.
Okay, so it's resources that you can use to do what exactly with? Is it to make your portfolio look a little bit stronger before you go to a lender? Or what's the pro there?
Yeah, so look at it like this. The pro would be, are you familiar with Shark Tank, the show? So you notice that when you have an investor like Mark Cuban, he wants to invest in a business. He'll say, well, I'll give you $500,000 in exchange for 15% of your company. In order to make the next leap in their business, to take the next step, that business owner might have been $500,000 short. Maybe they can't get traditional funding or get funding from any other sources or hard lending funders or anything like that in exchange for giving up some of the equity in their own business. And sometimes a person can give up so much ownership that they actually lose the business because they may give a investor 51% and they only have 49%, so that investor can make all the decisions. So just look at it as a person is short of capital, and that's where the venture capital comes in. They pool funds and resources together to make up the difference in exchange for equity in that company. So the company achieves their goal, but at the same, the trade-off is that they give up some of their ownership in their business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like the Shark Tank reference. That's a easy way to think about it.
I feel like we all can relate to that, Chef.
One of the other terms that would be used on a lot of marketing materials is amortization. Can you explain what that means? It sounds like a long, fancy word, but I think it means something simple.
Yeah, it sounds fancy, but it's very simple. It's just the entire term or period that it would take to pay off a loan. I shouldn't have said term in that situation, but the entire time that it would take to pay off a loan. So 30-year home mortgage is amortized. You know exactly what you're paying for those 30 years. It breaks down what percentage of the payment goes towards principal, what percentage goes towards interest, but it's pretty much payments that you make over the entire length of a loan, however long that may be. So 30 years, 20 years.
Okay. And the beginning of funding, like your loan has been funded and that's when it starts. That's your start date and your
Correct.
Ending date is the time period of amortization, right?
Correct. The maturity. Yes.
Okay. Awesome. What about a bridge loan? I see that term floated around pretty often. What does a bridge loan mean?
So a bridge loan is pretty much a short-term loan that a company can use or a person can use to secure permanent financing during a construction period. So let me see, the best way to put this is into layman's terms is if I was constructing some type of retail space or multifamily housing project or something like that, a bridge loan would allow the borrower to meet their current obligations. They may not necessarily have the funds available, but it will basically give them immediate cash to meet any short-term loan, short-term obligations that they have in that project. And sometimes they can have high interest rates, but they're usually backed by some form of collateral, such as the real estate that that business is trying to secure or the inventory of that business. So basically think of it as a gap loan. I'm constructing this project. The project's going until I can get permanent financing, and permanent finances come when the project has been completed. We've leased it up, but we have tenants that are coming in. The building is drawing revenue. Until it can get to that point, we may have costs that need to be taken care of in between time. So that bridge loan kind of bridges that construction period to the point to where we can get the permanent loans.
Okay. So is the bridge loan and the permanent financing with the same company? You wouldn't go to a different company to get a bridge loan and then come to Clearinghouse and get a permanent?
Great question. It can be with two companies, between two companies. Sometimes what they call mezzanine money, which is short-term money. That's why it has such a high interest rate. So some institutions do offer bridge loans. It doesn't necessarily have to be with the institution that's the lead in lien position. So, but usually the company that's going to do the permanent loan maintains first position on the project, because that bridge loan is a short-term thing. So it's not something that's going to be considered down the road. So it can be between two institutions or just that one institution.
And in this scenario that we're using as an example, the company that would provide the bridge loan, would they be listed second lien position?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Now here's another one. Lien position. What does that mean? If you're a first lien position or second lien position, what's the advantage?
So both positions have a interest in the security, right? We both have a stake in the security, whatever that collateral is. So let's say in the event that the borrower defaults on the loan, they're not able to make payments. So therefore, we have to confiscate collateral and try to sell it off and make ourselves whole again. Basically, positions on the lien means who will be paid out first in the event that someone defaults on the loan. They can't make the loan payments. We have to sell their property. Okay, who in which order, who gets the funds from that property being sold? So if Clearinghouse is in first position and Wells Fargo is in second, we'll get our money first. Wells Fargo will get their money second. If there's any equity left over after that, they'll just go back to the borrower. So that's how it works. Lien position is just, I like to say, layman's term, who has first dibs? I have first dibs on that. So whatever position, if you're in senior position, which is the first position, then you'll be paid first if collateral has to be sold.
Okay, so lien position just kind of has to do with when the money's being repaid, who kind of gets the first priority.
First priority of rights, yes.
Okay, interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. Again, those are terms that I see often on like marketing materials and other things, but I never really grasp
exactly
what concept.
Well, there it is. I try to make it plain. You know, some of this financial jargon can go over people's heads sometimes, so I just try to make it plain for it.
Yeah, Blade did a great job. Thank you. Okay. Okay, now that we've defined some of those more confusing terms, I want to walk through the whole loan process with you, start to finish, so that our borrowers can get a clear idea of what they're in for.
Okay.
Let's start with number one. When you come to Clearinghouse and you submit an inquiry, what happens? What kind of information are we looking for? What are the initial steps?
So usually when a client submits an inquiry, we, as the BDO, the business development officer, receive their referral. I review the information. Usually it's just basic information surrounding the deal, explaining what the client is looking for, the amount, the time frame that they would prefer to accomplish this. Pretty much just the outline of the deal. It doesn't give too many details about expected rate structures or things of that nature. So once I review that and get an idea of what the client is looking for, I'll follow up via email or by phone just to get some additional information. Because sometimes clients or brokers will send over just your bare bones minimum, just explaining what they're looking for, but they won't send any documentation or photographs that identify the property or anything of that nature. So sometimes you have to reach out and get that additional information. But usually you just want to have a conversation first to make sure that it's a deal worthwhile moving forward with, making sure it's a deal that fits the company's portfolio that we'd be willing to look at. And also seeing what type of impact it does it have. Is the business owner a minority? Is it woman-owned? Is the business located in an economically distressed area or underserved area that would make receiving funds and create more jobs in that community? That identifies an impactful deal. So I'm looking over that. If I see that a deal has the potential to move forward, usually if it's a construction deal, they'll have what they call a pro forma, which just lists projections with the return they expect the project to have. So I review that. I'll run a preliminary assessment based off of their financial statements, which includes their profit and loss statement or income statement, the balance sheet. And I'll make sure that based on their net income and their expenses, whatever is left over, they can service the debt of the loan amount that they're requesting. As long as that looks good, I draft up a letter of interest for the client. And that's basically just lists projected terms and conditions of the loan, expected payments and fees for the loan, what's required of the borrower, time frame to return that signed letter of interest. Send that out to them. The client reviews it. They sign it. They return it to me. And I forward that to underwriting. Underwriting reviews the information, make sure I've crossed my T's, dot my I's, make sure it makes sense financially. Once they approve it to move forward to a loan committee, it goes to a loan committee, which is a board of about 5 members, I believe, where the officer then explains the deal to the board committee and basically tries to sell why it should be approved. Once it's approved, then we go through closing. The loan is funded and distributed. The client is able to do what they need to do. And then as a business development officer, we always want to provide a dedicated follow-up in loan servicing. So we're reaching out, whether it be once a month, once a quarter, whatever the case may be, just making sure that everything is still going well for the client. That's pretty much the entire the loan process. Usually when it involves collateral, such as real estate, the entire process can take 45 to 60 days.
Okay, start to finish. And that whole time, the borrower has people like their business development officer and people in loan servicing that they can go to ask questions, to get support, to get education, right? Is that kind of people you would recommend?
Absolutely correct. Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Awesome.
We like to stay in touch with the client through the entire process. We never want to leave them in the dark. So we just like to take them along. And that's another part of educating the client as they go through the process. So not only for this deal, but they're able to apply that knowledge on future deals.
That's awesome. I love that approach. I think the loan process can be daunting and scary. And when you have a team that you can, you know, feel comfortable going to and is available, that makes the process that much easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Keone, that is all of my questions for you. We learned a lot. Thank you for giving us those definitions, for walking us through the loan process, for detailing some of the differences between CDFIs and banks. It was a really educational episode, so thank you for all of your insight.
Thank you for having me, Caitlin, and we thank you for your platform and continue to educate our clients and future borrowers, and you're doing a great service. Continue to excel at what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, you guys, that is a wrap on episode 7. We're going to leave Keone's contact information in the episode description so you can reach out to him. If you have a loan question or you want to submit an inquiry, we're available. But until then, we will see you on the next episode of Funded. Have a good one. Bye.
Later. Bye-bye.